You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on the Everything app, except you can't. Maybe we'll release a new Twitter account this week and we'll fire up some Jeff's bets as we get into rivalry week. Maybe that'll be the glorious return of the Everything app. Stay tuned. As always, you can listen on the radio dial 92.9 as well as 680 AM, but we're also now streaming on Twitch, YouTube, and the Everything app, thanks to George Ruggiero. George is the producer of the program. You can follow him on the Everything app at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good day, Jeffrey. I just saw David's reaction to that. He seemed shocked, surprised. I don't know what other emotion was in there.
Okay, so I'm a little shook because
I don't think you're on.
Okay, so my facial
correct, George.
That's I can try it, so, but I can okay. Tinker on some things, but no, not right now.
I've got the YouTube pulled up now, and whoa, okay, yeah, it just came through the speakers. Yeah, no, yeah. That's crazy. That's awesome. Good work, George. So
thank you. So much appreciated.
Stepping into the future there. That's so I can see Jeffrey like full like a almost like on a security camera. That's kind of what it looks like.
Yeah,
like watch. Stream, it's like a security camera.
Yeah, so we are storming into the year like 2015 probably. George,
we're getting there.
Listen, I've always made the argument that my beloved hometown, like things that happen elsewhere in the world happen to us like 10 years later, so this is like right on par.
Well, I just subscribed to the ESPN 92.9 YouTube channel, and I honestly, I don't subscribe to anything on YouTube because I'm like, why would I do this? YouTube already knows what I want to watch. Like, it's going to have the 1997 Masters final round
absolutely.
Pulled up for me as soon as I open YouTube. So, like, why do I need to subscribe if the algorithm knows? But for the sake of the brand, I just subscribed.
Yeah, here's another World War II video. Here is, let's see.
Here are West Virginia Tavon Austin highlights.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, here's like a college football game from 1997. Like, I remember this one.
Jeffrey, you know what they say is that when your YouTube algorithm starts giving you World War II documentaries, that's what they call early onset Republican.
No, the real one, though, is when it starts sending you World War I videos. Wait a minute.
I don't know what, well, that's fascism, though, isn't it?
There's,
I don't know what that is.
No. That's fascism. It gives way to fascism. But imagine this. World War II has a prequel.
It does, yeah.
Yeah, that's World War I.
So your algorithm shows you World War I?
Oh, I mean, it shows me everything, like all of that. Like, yeah. my YouTube video is like nothing but like football discussion and like World War I and World War II videos.
I
oh, and... and fraud, like SBF, Elizabeth Holmes, like Theranos, yeah. FTX, like those kind of like scandals. It sends me all, it very much sends me down that rabbit hole.
I get a lot of condensed game college highlights suggested to me, which is that's what I use YouTube for the most. Is okay, I didn't get to watch such and such a game last night. I'm just going to go watch that 15-minute condensed version. So I get a lot of those too.
Yeah, so I'll definitely get like the highlights. There's the occasional game that happened over the weekend highlights, but like for the most part, it's more of the like commentary that it sends me. All right, so there's a couple things I want to discuss with you. We'll start with the Grizzlies, but I don't really know how much there is to like really say because they did it again. You get Jaren back, and then Edie quickly goes out. And so I don't know how everybody else was consuming it. It was the first quarter is always the sweet spot of actual war for parents, bath and bedtime.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'm kind of going back and forth between watching the game and then helping my wife out. And I come back and I find out Edie's out. I don't know why. So then because I don't have Twitter, I would normally have like DeMichael's notifications set up. So if I would just go to scroll the Everything app and see what DeMichael was saying. Saw nothing. Then I have to do the good old fashioned Google.
Oh.
To where I actually got
2009.
Shout out to DeMichael. I mean, DeMichael had the quick hit story up within, I don't know, 30 minutes. I felt like very quickly. And so we see it's a head injury. So I have this question. Did we ever figure out during the broadcast, like the specific play?
So they went and tried to identify the play that it was. And the one that they pegged as, hey, we think this is where it happened. It was very odd. Like, there was nothing there that really made you think, oh, wow, he's got a concussion. Like, it was just bizarre. Because of all people, too, you would think Zach Edey would be the one who wouldn't be affected by marginal contact. I don't know, man. It was weird. It was really, really weird.
And I guess maybe this is that situation where, you know, a 300, I don't know, what is Jokic? Probably 315 pounds, 320 pounds. Like, you take a shot from him. Maybe it doesn't look like much, but it is. I don't know. That it was just very strange to me because also, you know, Edie starts the game and he has kind of that nice little inside move on Jokic. And you're like, man, that was nice. And then you just find yourself going like, don't ever start thinking anything's good because it's just going to get ripped away from you.
Yeah.
All right. This was the other thing that I wanted to discuss with you because honestly, I didn't feel like they played that badly. And really, if we go back to really the Cleveland game, which was Edie's return, while they've not racked and stacked wins, I think their level of play has been noticeably better. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Like, you watch last night's game, it was a competitive team throughout. Honestly, there were just a lot of instances where the Nuggets hit shots, like Peyton Watson going off. I mean, there's a certain level of aberration in that, and I felt like the Grizzlies were legitimately competitive in the game. So, yes, I mean, I'm with you on that.
Yeah, I think the disheartening thing was, and this is where I do think the loss of Edie comes into play, is that it felt like they made that push. I think it was like a 14-6 run or something like that to cut it down to 6. And then it felt like from that point forward, the Nuggets just led by 9. Like, even if the Grizzlies would come back and hit a big shot, to your point, either Watson would hit a 3, Murray would hit a 3, Jokic hit one in there. Like, it just felt like every time the Grizzlies were close to getting it back to a one possession game, Denver had all the answers.
I thought that the one that was particularly brutal was that trash Jokic 3 at the end of the third quarter. Like, it was just a backbreaker, man, because pretty close game. Felt like you had some momentum, and then he does that. It's just ridiculous.
Well, then his half court, like, free throw is what it seemed like at the end of the half to actually, like, that was one of the most casual reactions I've ever seen to an incredible play.
Oh. And then the one to seal it with the behind the back pass, with the left. Oh, I mean, he's so good. And I will say this, like, I was wondering this too, because I was watching game and I'm looking at the crowd, and, you know, in the intro, Pete and Brevin are talking about it's a rainy Monday night in Memphis, and I'm thinking, I wonder what the what this crowd's going to be like. It actually looked like a pretty good crowd, and it kind of got me wondering, like, do people come out and buy tickets to see Nikola Jokic? Like, is that a thing? Because he's never really, like, registered to me as a guy who's going to drive ticket prices up and get 17,000 in the building on a Monday, on a rainy Monday night, you know?
I think he's definitely more of a draw. My gut instinct on that was, this is people getting back, like kids getting back in town from
week,
yeah, everyone's just going, because we don't have the traditional Black Friday game, which used to be honestly one of my favorite games of the year. Like, when everyone's back in town, like, that Friday game was always fun. My read on that was more, because I've not noticed Jokic being a particular draw, but I'm not ruling it out, because that's the other thing I realized, like, every time I lock in and watch Jokic, I have no problem that SGA was given the MVP last year, but it's like, I do not think those two players are the same.
He's far and away the best player in the NBA. There's nobody like him either. That's the thing. The things that he does on the court at his size with his touch and the paint, I mean, it's just, there's nothing like it. And I did go back and look and find, because DeMike identified the sequence as being at the 9:09 mark of the first quarter.
All right.
And Jokic did, it almost looked like he tried to tear Zach Edey's head off in that moment. But, like, Zach Edey kept chasing the basketball and didn't immediately come out. So, like, I don't know. It's just very weird, and it makes me apprehensive, because if it's some sort of, like, you know, if he was fine in the moment, then what's really going on up there that's made this a situation where he has to leave the game? Like, I don't know. It's just
so the I mean, this is obviously speculating for everyone out there, but this is just Dave and I, like, talking about it, watching games. The only things that come to mind are, number one, an official saw something later and said, hey, go get him checked out. Now, we don't really see that very often. That's more of like an NFL or college football thing. But that came to mind. Or the other thing was, what did you say, 9:09 in the first quarter?
Right.
The only other thing that came to mind is, okay, that's usually right around the first media break. I wonder if when he sat down in the huddle, then they checked him out.
Right. Yeah, it was just a bizarre sequence where he just took a more of a glancing blow, I would say. So I don't know. But yeah, it's just crazy. Like, just when you think you've got a close to complete team, close to complete lineup. I mean, you got Jaren Jackson Jr. out there with Zach Edey. It's this, you know, this look that we've been wanting to see. Now we got a good opponent coming in. Still, obviously, point guard depth is decimated, whatever. But, like, man, they could have won that game. Like, and I don't want to take anything away from Jock Landale. Like, Jock Landale was awesome last night. Probably the best game of his season.
I mean, I would think career, right?
Probably. I mean, but in terms of actually competing with Nikola Jokic and...
Yeah, it wasn't like he was going up against, like, Slaw.
Yeah, but still, you just can't help but wonder what if Edey had been available, because it just...
Oh, I definitely do, because this has always been my contention with Edey, and I can feel you starting to... I'm not saying you're interested in buying property, but you're more of just not combative.
Uh-huh.
I'm coming around. They have no chance of getting stops without him.
Which is really concerning. Like,
That is a larger problem.
I guess I don't think he's that elite of a defender. I mean,
very skilled rebounder. To me, the other big, like, the key aspect of it is, you can't just abuse him inside, like at the rim, and get the freebies. But I feel like the other aspect of him is, teams are less willing to drive the paint and then do the kick out. Whereas, like, to me, it's like the quintessential Grizzlies give up a three is somebody handling the ball, get inside the paint, everybody collapses, kick out, wide open three, bang. Yeah. Like, I feel like we've been rinse repeat watching that for, like, the last 7 years.
Well, I think what it is more so than anything is just the ability of a large person to stand in the paint and influence the offense. Because I think what I see so often without Zach Edey on the floor, and this even happens when Jock Landale is out there because he's not rough and rugged and huge, is the opposing big just seals off who should ostensibly be your rim protector. And they just seal him off and kind of bully him underneath the basket. And then whoever the driver is able to to get a lane to the basket. You can't do that with Zach Edey. I mean, he's too big. You can't clear him out using your body and setting a de facto screen. And so he's just going to be there. And just his mere presence is more so than anything that I would say is skilled about Zach Edey. It's just the size of him that deters offensive possessions. So, I think maybe to a certain extent, I underestimated like his impact in the NBA in that capacity. Cause I didn't ever really think of him as an elite rim protector in college, though he was good. It's just when you have a player of that size, but like with every 7'4" giant that's ever played this game, can you stay healthy? I mean, that's the thing. Can you stay healthy?
Yeah. I guess for me though, the ankle was more concerning than this. This feels kind of just bad luck. Like, I'm much more concerned about like lower body injuries with the bigs. But to your point about Edey and in college, I was also always kind of willing to maybe not grade him as critically in particular in like draft prep, because it did seem like a massive portion of their defensive strategy was like, you cannot get fouls.
Yeah, for sure. Because you're going to look to him every time down the floor on offense. And if the engine of your offense is in foul trouble, that's a bad situation. I think that's a really good call. that's a really good call.
All right. So here's the other thing I wanted to discuss. Jaren's obviously a hot topic locally, in the streets. I don't think he looks right. And like, I give him credit for gutting it out and like, hey man, like that's what we want to see. I just do not think it has been since what was the game where he stepped on the guy's ankle?
Was that San Antonio?
Yeah, you're right. It was the San Antonio game because it was the NBC game. Steps on the guy's ankle, finishes the possession, but really kind of hobbled, played the rest of the game, but then did he sit out two games or just one?
Two.
So he sits out two. I just don't think he particularly looks right. Now, I'm not saying that defends 1 of 10 from three, or what did he finish?
1 of 8.
1 of 8 from three. Like, I am appreciative of a guy gutting it out. I'm a little sensitive to being overly critical when I think what he's doing is he knows the team's shorthanded, and I think he's gutting it out, but I don't think he's anywhere near 100%.
Yeah, I didn't realize until just now he was a minus 27 last night. Three turnovers, no blocks. As you mentioned, 1 of 8 from three. So, I mean, in real time, I wasn't really like dissecting it all that closely, but yeah, I would tend to agree. Like, he's not 100%. But honestly, like, dude, you got to play sometimes when you're not 100%.
No, I agree. I mean, this has honestly been one of my biggest complaints with Ja. Like,
I think it lets him off the hook a little bit too. Like the
I agree, but I guess it's more of, and since you're not wrapped up in it every day, it is a heavy topic of conversation. And it's like,
oh, no, I mean, hey, early on this season, I mean, I was right there with you.
Now, absolutely.
I did feel like before the injury, maybe he was starting to turn a corner a little bit. Like, he was at least getting more shots. Like, it wasn't like he was MIA on the floor. Like, it felt like he was at times early in the season when he was getting, you know, 7 or 8 looks a game. When it's like, that can't happen for the Grizzlies to be at their best. Like, Jaren Jackson Jr. has got to be taking 15 shots a game. And it felt like they were sort of starting to figure that out. And then, you know, this injury happens and you got Edey back in the lineup and they got to figure out how to play together. And I mean, that's the problem, is that we're now a quarter of the way through the season almost. And it feels like there's, you know, there's been no continuity ever with this team. We still haven't seen the desired optimum starting five. Who knows when we will, or if we ever will. That's the infuriating part, is just the inability to put all the pieces together on the floor on a given night, just to entertain the idea of what it would look like.
Yeah, I'm with you, because the other thing that really stands out is, as bad as the start has been, they're sitting here at 10th and they're still in the play-in. And like,
there's some bad teams in the West this year.
Well, this has kind of been my other point, is that I really do think like this is kind of the rinse repeat bull strategy of Jerry Reinsdorf, where teams post like all-star break that have Like, if the Grizzlies could get, like, their guys back and have the young guys playing and playing more with experience and then starting to play better, those teams can kind of rack up a bunch of, let's be real, meaningless wins oftentimes in March and April. And, like, they can kind of move up. And so, to me, it's kind of where just kind of keep weathering this storm, because I do think the opportunity is going to be there for them to kind of have the role reversal of last year post All-Star break.
Honestly, man, ain't that the story of Memphis basketball as a whole right now? I mean, you look at the Tigers and the Grizzlies. This time last year, we were, you know, riding high. Grizzlies on their way to a great record at New Year's. Tigers were racking up these non-conference victories. The script couldn't be more different this year for either one of them.
Yeah, and I guess that's kind of the other thing, because I wanted to pick your brain on this, because this is another topic of conversation locally. I'm not out on the Tiger basketball team yet, because here would be my argument. Yes, the only game I would throw into the alarming was the UNLV game, and I still kind of keep going back to, it's like, as poor as the effort was, there's just not going to be many games that you're going to win when Doug McDaniel is, I think he was like, he had 6 points, 8 turnovers, and I think he was like 1 of 12 from the field. Like, you're probably not winning many games. Every other game that they've gone up against, which I think you could make the argument, almost every team is either at least a fringe tournament team or a tournament team, they have looked like they belong on the floor. Now, where I start to, this is kind of my caveat on that. It's like, I'm not out on them, but these next two games are the types of games that it's like, prove that this is different. You've got Southern Illinois. What are we with Southern Illinois and, because Alabama State's later, right?
New Orleans is.
Oh yeah, sorry. I was like,
that New Orleans team almost beat Mississippi State last night. But I digress.
Yeah, but like, these are the games where, like, because I made the point when DeMichael was on the show on Friday. It's like every single one of us that has watched Penny Hardaway's basketball teams, when Purdue came out and you were getting 16 and a half points, we should all sprinted to the window, because when they are playing a big game against an opponent that they respect, they're going to give you a good effort. And like, yeah, that game could have maybe gotten away from them a little bit late, but it's like that game was inside the number the entire time. And then obviously the ending sequence of Wake Forest is some of the lowest basketball IQ I've ever seen.
That was the alarming part.
Correct. And I'm not saying like I'm completely ignoring this, but what I would say is, all right, despite the horrifically low basketball IQ sequences to end the game, if the ball bounces one other direction, and let's say that game ends with Memphis winning 68-66, are we really feeling that much different? Like, you know what I mean? Like, we would have basically said that was a good trip. You were competitive against Purdue. You gave them a good fight. You gave them a better fight than even Texas Tech did. You came back, another good effort against Wake Forest in a game where I think a lot of people like, oh, man, this would be a time for them to not show up after they left it on the floor. And I'm still open to the idea that they're having to kind of experiment. They're trying to figure out the front court, the rotations that work. Like, they're still trying to get the elements together, and I'm not ready to say, like, this team's horrible.
So where I'm at on Memphis basketball is, one, I do think that if they had beaten Wake Forest, that there might still be a path here for an at-large bid. Because at that point, okay, maybe you beat Vandy, you beat Mississippi State, you got to win over Wake Forest under your belt. Like, all right, maybe you can cobble together enough there to go into league play feeling like you've got a shot at 16-2 or 15-3 to make it as an at-large. I'll be honest, I don't really see that path for Memphis after a 1-4 start. The only way that they can go in my mind, into the league schedule with any hopes of an at-large bid is winning at Louisville. I think winning at Louisville would be a quad 1A+ kind of win that you just aren't going to find, that not many teams around college basketball will have a win that good. So if you go to Louisville and you win in the way they played against Purdue, I mean, who's to say it's impossible, right? Then maybe you get back on track in terms of an at-large bid. But this has got to be a season where they play the long game. And that's, if they can just keep the chemistry going in the right direction, if they can keep ego problems to a minimum, if they can just keep kind of taking little bites and improving here and there, then yeah, like they're going to have a chance, because this AAC is crap. The AAC is awful.
Okay,
I mean,
so
as bad as it's ever been. And that's a great thing for Memphis. That is a fantastic thing for Memphis. Last year, it stunk. It stunk that the ACC was so bad, because it felt like every loss you dropped the seed line. This year, it's not going to matter. You're not going to be an at-large team. So the worse the league is, the better, because the easier chance you have of skating through it and getting the automatic bid.
Okay, so I think we're in the same spot, because part of the discussion is, because I'm with you, they're going to have to flip one of, like, they're basically going to have to win out the rest of the way in non-league play to have the opportunity to be an at-large team. But I guess what I'm saying is, because I'm kind of with you, if this team doesn't fall apart, and so far, like, they haven't yet. And if they don't, because I was really worried that the brutality of the non-conference schedule could set up the situation where this team just never gets it back on track. And the makings were there. But if they can keep improving, I think that this team can go and basically, maybe not go undefeated in the American, but they can clearly be a 1 or 2 seed. And then if you're a 1 and 2 seed in the conference tournament, you get the bye all the way to Saturday. And then you've just got to win 2 games and you're the conference rep. That's kind of where I am, in the sense of but that's also why, weirdly, these next 2 games, probably I'm putting more stock into, I'm taking more data from these next 2 games, because what my concern has been all along is, what do they do when they go up against these bad teams? And I use air quotes bad teams, because these teams are capable of beating them.
Well, sure. I mean, these Southern Illinois and New Orleans are your lower to mid-tier caliber AAC type of teams that you will face in January and February. And we know that there have obviously over the years been issues in those types of games. You take a random Thursday night loss at UTSA or something, right? And some of that's going to happen. My thing that I want to see from Memphis basketball is just develop some sort of a flow within the half-court offense, because in those moments where your up-tempo, high-intensity defense isn't creating turnovers and isn't leading to transition baskets, like if you're having to play more of a half-court style of game for whatever the reason may be, like who are you looking to get a bucket? Because last year you had option 1A, PJ Haggerty, driving to the basket, kicking out to Tyrese Hunter, Colby Rogers, drawing a foul, or, hey, we'll play through Dame Danger on the block. Well, in this team, I don't see – there's nothing that's easy or obvious about where to go and get a bucket from in the half court. And that's like – that's one of those very simple things that are very important that is a huge issue for them right now, and they're going to have to get that resolved.
Yeah, I guess where I would say is it feels like Doug is the guy, but to your point, because there's also not other focal points, it's like late game, everybody knows – we got to stop Doug. And I think that's what you see. And so then everybody collapses on him and there's nobody else to pick up the slack.
Yeah. So right now, Doug McDaniel averages 15 points a game. Nobody else averages more than 8.8 points per game. So like to a certain extent, like depth is great and it's good to have a variety of options. And the fact that they can go 10 or 11 deep allows them to play at that high intensity up-tempo pace for 40 minutes. But you got to have somebody else who's there who can step up and be your secondary scorer. That's what last year's team had, because Tyrese Hunter could be that secondary scorer to PJ Haggerty and Dane Danger. And Colby Rogers could knock down those big shots. It's like a different guy kind of every night in that role for Memphis. And like on the one hand, that's great. But on the other hand, like we need to figure this out and figure out who we're going to in the half court to get buckets. And, you know, that's just that's not an unfixable problem. Like that can
no.
they can figure that out.
I would also, we've got to maybe come up with a good old-fashioned red light, green light, yellow light. The shot selection the last, like, 6 minutes was horrific.
I mean, Zachary Davis shooting that ball with, what, 8 seconds left with the shot clock off and a 2-point lead?
No, the worst was multiple guys got hands on the basketball with the shot clock off and nobody kicked it out.
Brutal. Just brutal.
And I mean, I guess I also said this. this is definitely loser talk. I think if they would have put the stopwatch on the final play, I think it was more than 1.5 seconds.
Ooh.
Because clock started late. Because it's supposed to be right when it touches his hand, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Now,
okay, it's funny. Funny you say that. I feel like there were issues with the clock and the scoreboard all throughout that.
Oh,
event. I mean,
yes.
Like CBS Sports Network, I love you, but like it was weird. It was weird, and honestly, you know why I noticed this? Because when Wake Forest lost to Texas Tech the night before,
yep, they ran the same play.
Yeah, yeah, they did. And I had, or you know, a friend of mine or somebody I know may have had, Texas Tech minus -3.
Oh boy,
and so that's Wake tough. Forest makes that shot. I mean, you know, my friend who had that bet, he was just devastated.
Yeah,
and
I hope that friend had a good rest of the weekend.
Yeah, it was anyway. But I thought the same thing because I'm like, I hope they go back and review that because I felt like the clock was a touch slow to start, and I know it didn't matter to the outcome of the game. But I felt the same way the night before that you felt about it in real time. And honestly, you know, 1.5 seconds is barely enough to pull that playoff, to make the catch, the pass, the shot, like, you know, and they executed it very well. But yeah, I mean, I'm kind of with you on that.
I mean, cause think about this. They basically ran the Valpo play.
Right.
And if memory serves, the Valpo play was 2.7. Like, I don't know. I just remember thinking like in real time. The other thing we got to credit, Jake Dickert's got to maybe check out whoever that inbounds pass guy is. That guy's got unbelievable touch. That guy has run that play twice in consecutive days, and every time I was like, that was a perfect pass.
Yeah, he layers the ball a little better than Robbie Ashford does.
Well, anyone layers the ball better than Robbie Ashford. Like that again, that's loser talk, and that also covers up for the fact that they should have missed the second free throw. The moment Doug hit the first one, you just missed the second one. And that was never even discussed. Like, Penny even mentioned it after the game, like, hand up. Like, we didn't even think about it.
I mean, you learn your lesson now, right? Like, because you're going to get that scenario again. I mean, it over the course of the next 30 games, like, I feel pretty confident you're going to end up in a similar scenario at some point. And it's just so maddening, man. The cacophony of errors to close that game is just... it's just absolutely brutal. I mean, the Zachary Davis shot, the failure to miss the free throw. Memphis should have called a timeout and set its defense there, because if they had actually scouted Wake Forest, they would have known what play they were going to run. And those are the sorts of things. If those types of losses start to pile up, that's I think when you get the disintegration of the locker room and the dissolution of the team chemistry and stuff. So that's the thing, is like, you just can't let stuff like that compound or happening, because then it gets ingrained in your psyche and it's just, you know, oh, we're a team that can't close out these games, and you know, our coach or these players don't know how to close out these games. Right. So, I mean, if they just go out here and they just need to wax SIU, wax New Orleans, pick off at least one or two of the high majors that you got left before the league play starts. And then, just try to keep building. Like, I think it's important too here for Penny to vision cast a little bit and to reset expectations, because obviously, like, this isn't going the direction we wanted it to, but it's not dead. Like, it's not a shot season by any stretch, because this league is ripe for the taking. I mean, it is right there for Memphis to go out and dominate. And they just got to keep it on the rails, man, and realize, like, you know what? We didn't get it done in November and December this year. Although that's not still, you know, set in stone yet. Like, they could still pick up. Like I said, you win at Louisville, that win would be as good of a win as anybody has in college basketball. So, you know, you got a couple weeks now to still get better before that one. And then, you know, and assuming you don't win it, like, you're still fine. Like, you still have a chance to go out and get this thing done in the league.
Yeah, I think it's like really going to depend on like a Penny adage, like, were these losses or were these lessons? Because I'm with you in the sense of, if you talk me into the losing can be motivational, well, then all of a sudden, like, I'm not really all that concerned with the results, because I didn't think of this team. I thought coming into the year, most likely the path for this team was win the league. Like, I thought that was their tournament path. I've seen nothing that's going to prevent them from doing that, unless the losing just takes its toll, and then everyone just gets on, you know, Q watch.
Yeah, they do need to figure out the rotations at some point, pare it down, and get a set lineup. And
Aaron Bradshaw probably – Jeff had the number – I want to say it was – he had 10 fouls in 16 minutes in the Bahamas.
So he's averaging 4 fouls a game in 11 minutes a game.
Well, I mean, he's literally fouling out. It was like fouling out in 8 minutes.
It's unreal. But, hey, look, Simon Mahak looks like a player. You know, you can go small here. Hopefully, what's his face? Ingram? Is it Ingram or Ingraham?
So I've been saying Ingram.
Yeah.
But
hopefully, I mean, it's spelled like Ingraham, but
I know.
Anyway,
but hopefully. I've never known. Is it like one of those ones like sometimes you'll read like McMahon reads like McMahon, but it's like, I don't.
Yeah.
I did not see it. All right. We will recap the weekend that was in college football. We'll hand out the weekly awards. I've got them, and Cobb can comment on them. We'll do that next. Also, George and I have been, Cobb, we've been really coming up with some interesting rivalry week scenarios. So I kind of want to play these out because...
Yeah, I'm so shook right now, Jeffrey. I'm like, when's he going to say that we'll talk to Eric Hasseltine? And then I realize today is Tuesday.
It's a Tuesday. So we'll do the awards. We'll also get into some playoff talk. We'll do all that when we come back right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
I'm done with subscriptions. Streaming, fitness, razors, vitamins. I've got subscriptions for everything in my life. They lock you in, and half the time, I can't figure out how to unsubscribe. That's why I'm so excited about the new Blue Apron. Now you can get delicious meals delivered with no subscription needed, including new pre-made options. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Come to DSW for the shoes, stay for the fun. Because, let's be honest, if shoe shopping isn't fun, are you even doing it right? So go ahead, try something new. Try something different. Good different. Try something that feels like you. You know, the real you. And then definitely brag about it later. Because at DSW, you've got unlimited freedom to play. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
ESPN. All right, Cobb. We normally do this every single week with Tim Murray, but we recap the weekend that was in college football. And I know sometimes this can be a little bit difficult because you're like, well, I've already done the recap. Like, what day is your Monday your day off or Sunday?
I don't really have one anymore.
Yeah, I, especially now that we're in the college basketball is going on and whatnot, which we got to talk about this. We got to talk about the, what are we calling it? The Players Era Festival.
Yeah, it's totally changed Feast Week.
Yeah.
Maybe not for the better, unless you like watching college basketball played in sterile environments
It's always a nice reminder of how many ridiculously big arenas Vegas has.
No kidding, man. Like, yeah, these games are being played in multiple different arenas. They should have played them in the Summer League Auxiliary Gym.
Yeah, the back gym over at Thomas and Mack or whatever.
Exactly. It'd be a better atmosphere, you know, than these 90% empty arenas. I mean, don't get me on my soapbox about. I mean, I like the matchups. Like, the matchups are good. The fact that you got a lot of teams, it'd be a great event to cover because you could be around a lot of good players, a lot of good coaches in a short amount of time. Like, but outside of that, like, there's not really anything to like about it.
All right, so we'll talk a little bit more about that during the list, but we'll start with the team of the week. And honestly, Cobb, I was prepared with about 6 minutes left on Saturday night to announce that Kansas State was going to be my team of the week because I've been very hard on Kansas State. I don't really know what they're doing, but they had the opportunity to make me not wrong just early. So I still contend the Utah love that Utah's getting is fascinating to me because their resume is incredibly thin, and I thought Kansas State was going to knock them out. Unfortunately, they did not, and so I cannot obviously give Kansas State team of the week for covering. The only other options that I think are realistic are Oregon or Tennessee finally snapping the streak. And the reason why I'm going to end up going with Oregon is, wow, Florida looks done.
Yeah, Oregon actually played a team with a pulse, unlike Tennessee, which played a Florida team that's completely quit. That last week's slate was pretty bad. Now, I will say the silver lining of that was, for most people, this was a horrible thing. For ABC, this was a horrible thing. For me, it was really enjoyable because, Jeffrey, I've seen a lot of Tennessee teams go and lose in the swamp.
Yep.
I've covered Tennessee losses in the swamp. There's not a whole lot of games that I still get emotionally, like, really interested in from a Tennessee fan perspective. Like, sure. A lot of that has been sort of just baked out of me over the years. But, man, it was very pleasing to see Tennessee go and just beat the crap out of Florida. I really did enjoy that. But having said all that, I understand why you went with Oregon. They actually played a real opponent. And, I mean, they had to win that game because there's no way a two-loss Oregon against that schedule would have deserved to be in the playoff. So, yeah, kudos to the Ducks.
Yeah, because honestly, the biggest reason why I went with Oregon, because I did put my money where my mouth was on Florida. We're on Tennessee. Like, I just had all week, I was just like, it's ending here. Like, it's like, I'm not letting that Ole Miss. That Ole Miss final score, it's weird how a lot of the narratives around teams are not consistent. Like, if you would have watched, I'm convinced if Georgia plays the same game against Florida, that we are promoting Georgia more than we would be Ole Miss. And this is not me, the Ole Miss defender. If you actually watch the game, they had a horrible second quarter. I mean, they were terrible. And then it was a lot of red zone blunders. But they outgained them basically 2-1. Like, they dominated the football game. It was a really bad quarter, and they still won by 10. Like, it is interesting to me to see, like, there are games where we nitpick teams, whereas when Georgia had to hang on to beat Florida, no one really cared. Like, it's a rivalry game, whatnot. Like, it's kind of interesting how we do that. But the other big reason why I went with Oregon was Oregon is obviously banged up, and I thought it was impressive that USC showed up for that game, and Oregon just kind of always felt in control. Whether it was like, if it was like, I really felt like if it was going to come down to somebody was going to have to make a stop, I did not really have a lot of faith that USC was going to make a stop. Then when it came down to it, it's like Oregon forces a couple of turnovers and then they get the punt return. Like, it was just a pretty complete effort against a USC team that I don't think is like all the way there. But if you squint, you can start to see like maybe this Lincoln Riley thing is starting to turn a corner a little bit.
See, I don't totally understand that narrative, to be honest, Jeffrey, because
it's the bodies.
I know, but USC still can't run the football. They still can't get the critical stops defensively. There's still holes in the special teams. it just to me feels like a hollow product. And then Oregon has a banged up offensive line that they're down at one point in that game, three offensive line starters, yet they're still able to run the football fairly well. They're still able to keep Dante Moore upright in the pocket. And it's like, if not now, then when? Because, I mean, that unit was battered to pieces to the point where USC should have been able to generate a pass rush, should have been able to be better against the run than they were. And it's like, yeah, I just don't know. Like, I just don't believe. Like, I think Lincoln Riley's done a good job of selling us that his team is tougher and better and on the right path. But when are we actually going to see it in a game that matters?
I mean, I think you make the argument. The Iowa game is a game that I think the previous two USC teams don't win. I'm with you on the Michigan. Like Michigan, we're gonna get into that one, but I will say this: it's fair to be skeptical because one of my USC buddies texted me, Lincoln Riley and Clay Helton have the same record.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And like, obviously, being in the Big Ten is a little bit tougher than being in that dying version of the Pac-12. Like, I give you that. I do think that if you lined up a Lincoln Riley team, this team in particular, head-to-head with your average Clay Helton team, that the Riley team would win the game. But the actual results are not what they are paying Lincoln Riley for. And I made this point with Gabe, but it bears repeating, isn't it? Like, significant or symbolic that these fourth-year coaches going up against each other in this game. Now, I understand Dan Lanning has Phil Knight. He has Nike. He has the money. I get all that. But, like, when you go back to that crazy coaching carousel 4 years ago, Lincoln Riley, Brian Kelly, you know, the list goes on. It was just an insane cycle. And Mario Cristobal leaves Oregon for Miami. And then, meanwhile, like, Oregon's sitting here, the team that hired a coordinator from the SEC, and they're in better shape right there with Notre Dame, which promoted from within. Like, the two schools that looked like they got screwed and had to make what were at the time viewed as, like, backup-level hires – 4 years later are the two programs that are in the best shape.
No, I think it's more than a fair point. My Heisman winner of the week, I'm going with Diego. 33 of 39, 484 yards, 5 touchdowns. He did throw a pick. Also had 63 rushing yards and a touchdown. I ask you this question, Cobb. Is it possible with a big win in Neyland on Saturday, Diego could maybe backdoor this Heisman trophy?
Let's go. Yeah, you're speaking my language now. He's gonna be
at
the top.
I'm not trying to like speak in the. I'm not trying to speak in the Tennessee loses to Vandy. And I'm saying like if he has a big game, like I do wonder if this is on table.
I mean, whatever. Like Tennessee loses to Vanderbilt, who cares? Like I got my emotional rise out of Tennessee winning at the Swamp for the first time since 2003. Like something that hadn't been done since I was in fifth grade. But like honestly, if Vanderbilt wins this game over Tennessee, it's no sweat off my back, right? Like. In some ways, I think it would be really cool to see Vanderbilt go 10-2 and sneak into the playoff, and for Diego Pavia at minimum to be in New York City for the Heisman ceremony. Because you think about like what the Heisman's supposed to be. I don't know. Like you can debate that, but if it's in any way, shape, or form given out to the player who means the most to their team, like there's absolutely zero doubt that he should be there and really be considered for it because. I mean, where's Vanderbilt without Diego Pavia? They're 5-7. I mean, they're five. Yeah, they're 5-7.
They're better. But I mean, like, let's see. I don't think they beat Missouri. Virginia Tech, South Carolina would be interesting.
Yeah.
They definitely don't beat Auburn.
Yeah, at best, we're probably talking about a six.
Yeah, at best, because I do think the rest of their roster's improved, but I think it's more than a fair point. All right, my dumpster fire of the week, and I think I'm just going with this. I'm going with Florida State because there's nothing quite like having your fan base have to read the statement that we're keeping your coach after you blow the NC State game with, were there three muff punts in that? Let's see, there was two muff punts, but wasn't there also a muff punt that the guy could have recovered and then he muffed the recovery?
Sounds about right.
Like it was like college football special teams inception.
I mean, I'm not debating that Florida State is a dumpster fire. It is. I think you could also go with Nebraska for that.
I think we go with Nebraska. UCLA is very much up there. I have no idea what Colorado's doing.
Illinois losing to Wisconsin by 17. There were a lot of dumpster fires last week, honestly.
Oh, I was laughing at that one because we were at an engagement party on Saturday night, and there's like minds always find each other. There was a hero in there, and I'm noticing like we have clearly what is probably not a legal stream of Illinois Wisconsin, and these are more my wife's friends, so I didn't know everyone in there, and I'm like, I guess we have some Wisconsin fans in here, Illinois fans. No, there was a hero that had a 4-team underdog parlay, and if Wisconsin hit, he was cashing like a plus 4,000 ticket.
Wow.
But they also put up the graphic, Brett Bielema, 45-5 at Camp Randall. And it was like, why is this a stat? Like, yeah, he was 44-5 as Wisconsin's coach and 1-0 at Illinois. I was like, that feels like a reach, Big Ten Network.
Yeah, I mean, that just is the icing on the cake, too, that he's the coach of the Illinois team that goes and loses to the worst Wisconsin team in a generation. So you could make the case they're dumpster fire of the week. I mean, honestly, you can make the case that Ole Miss, even on a bye week, is still your dumpster
fire.
Well,
we're gonna talk about them. Let's save them for the list. All right, my most college football moment of the week. I just had two. Justin Wilcox getting fired after a rivalry loss, even though they hit their win total. And unfortunately for us, they hit their win total. Although that's your only loss. I think you're 4-0. Four and one on that. And then also just another Georgia player getting arrested for speeding. Although this time, I kind of want to take up for the young man. The young man was afraid that his mom, who sped past them, was going to get a speeding ticket. And this is an offensive lineman. This was a man that was selflessly trying to make sure his mom didn't get a ticket. So he sped off and evaded cops so that his mom wouldn't get a ticket.
Ah, wow. That's a very selfless act.
Yeah. That's a right tackle, man.
I'm glad Kirby has got some high character guys who are willing to do that.
Well, Kirby did get up on Monday's press conference. Obviously, he's not with the team anymore.
So now we're changing. We take it seriously, huh?
Well, like, I was trying to do the math of, like, does this mean George is back? Like,
yeah, it was bad there for a while, a couple of years.
Well, I'm just saying, like, could it also be viewed as a negative? Because previously, Georgia, like, Kirby would have handled it internally.
Would have handled it internally, and the guy would have never been punished.
Now, granted, he wasn't a starter.
Yeah. If we're talking about Drew Bobo here, maybe it's a different story. Or old Gunnar Stockton getting pulled over in his 81.
I do not think Gunnar's truck could have done, because the guy was driving an M5.
I don't think it could have gone 110.
I don't think it was get up to 130.
Well, I'll have to watch that segment with Marty and see how fast they were going.
Yeah.
I got another college football moment of the week, more like multiple moments. I think you could give it to ESPN for how many times they showed Diego Pavia's mom.
Oh yeah, no, they've been leaning into that.
Just a college football thing right there. Let's show the woman associated with the player.
Giannotto and I were talking about this off the air. Never been a better time to be like a woman in her 40s that's pretty attractive. Like right now in college football, like that is very much in vogue.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You're going to get shown about, you need to start honestly putting your Instagram handle like on.
She's taking over the mantle from Jackson Dart's mom.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this is like on par with AJ McCarron's girlfriend back in the day.
Well, that's why I was also glad in the Georgia Texas game, you know, we lost this. When we lost the SEC on CBS, we also lost the producer truck that was just like, scan the student section, just be like, find the hottest girls you can. And ABC just leaned into it. They found that girl in the Georgia game that didn't need no floaties.
For the Vanderbilt game, I mean, you know, your options are honestly probably pretty limited. So it's like, all right, well,
it's not Michigan bad. I'll say this, like, I'll take up for Vandy. It's not Michigan bad.
Okay. I mean, the brains, though, that you can't argue with that. I mean, the brains are fantastic there.
All right, stock up, Wisconsin. I was thinking about this. Does Wisconsin now have more top 25 wins than some of the playoff teams that are going to get in? Do they have more than?
Wow.
Do they have? They have to have more than Oregon, right?
Let's see. I think you're right. Which is, I mean, Oregon has the one now, and Wisconsin beat Illinois and
Iowa, Washington.
Washington, yeah. I'm sorry. that's crazy. They're still so bad, though.
Oh yeah. No,
The Big Ten is honestly kind of a joke, which is why I got so mad with Dan Lanning throwing shade.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I get it. Listen, they're fighting fire with fire, but I totally agree with you. One of the big questions that I actually have is my eyes tell me Ohio State is on a different tier. But I do wonder, like, if Ohio State were in more games that had some game pressure, would I feel this way?
Yeah, for example, if they played the same schedule as Alabama or Georgia, what would their record be? What would their average margin of victory look like? Not because Alabama and Georgia have played an absolute murderer's row, but just because week in, week out, you're getting a more significant test. Even from the, quote, bad teams in the SEC, you at least got to show up, or else you're going to end up in an overtime game with South Carolina, or you're going to end up getting pushed uncomfortably into the fourth quarter by Kentucky or Auburn, even though these are the lower two
Arkansas.
Teams in the league, or Arkansas. Whereas in the Big Ten, the equivalent of those teams in terms of the hierarchy are awful. I mean, Michigan State, UCLA, Northwestern somehow has like a winning record and they're terrible, right? So it's like the bottom half of the Big Ten is so bad that like it makes it really hard to evaluate Ohio State and Indiana, frankly, too.
All right. My stock down. So I think Louisville was trying to act like Miller Moss got benched for an injury, or he was sat down for an injury, but he was dressed. Cobb, vibes are horrible there. Like, I think I'm going back to the old Stoops can get the boys up for Louisville. I think I'm going back to that well this week.
Yeah. Yeah, Kentucky's pretty banged up. That's the only issue. But I'm with you. I think it may have been one of those situations we see it a lot where the starting quarterback is, quote, has an injury because they don't want to publicly bench a guy who's
JJ McCarthy.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast. And if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered. It's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply. In-app only.
In a world of endless notifications, there could be an important one you're missing. Your kidneys may be signaling an SOS. With high blood pressure or type 2 diabetes, your kidneys could be warning you of early signs of damage, which may put you at higher risk for events like heart attack or stroke. But there's a simple test that can help spot a hidden signal. Ask your doctor about a urine test called UACR to help detect kidney disease and heart risk early. To learn more, visit detectthesos.com today.
So you want to start a business. You might think you need a team of people and fancy tech skills, but you don't. You just need GoDaddy Aero. I'm Walton Goggins, and as an actor, I'm an expert in looking like I know what I'm doing. GoDaddy Aero uses AI to create everything you need to grow a business. It'll make you a unique logo. It'll create a custom website. It'll write social posts for you and even set you up with a social media calendar. Get started at GoDaddy.com/Aero. That's GoDaddy.com/AIRO.